All right, so today we'll be finishing up our lecture from last time, the Church of Oprah. This will be the Church of Oprah Part 2, which we'll be finishing up. Just real quick, as I'm not going to summarize the majority of the content from last week, I will briefly go over what this amalgam that is the Church of Oprah comprises of. When I say the Church of Oprah, really what I'm saying is you have neo-paganism mixed with the hippie counterculture, mixed with Eastern mysticism such as Hinduism, Taoism, Buddhism. Add on top of that, secular humanism and the occult, and that's what you get with the Church of Oprah. Before we get back into we're going through a list of beliefs. The last time, but before we go back into that, I want to talk about the idea of the New Age movement, or really what that means. New Age movement can be referred to as postmodernism. Have you heard of that term before?
Yes.
Postmodernism, and it's quite simple what it means, and that it is the view that came after modernism. So it's really easy to define. Of course, the question is then, what is modernism? Modernism was the attempt to solve all of man's problems through unaided human reason. The time when modernism first became prevalent, they were scientists, mathematicians were coming to these various conclusions about the certain axioms of geometry. And it was a very exciting time, except for the problem was, this man got very focused on his intellectual prowess. And he believed that through that, all of man's problems would be solved. Unfortunately, two events completely destroyed any hopes of modernism achieving. The first one was World War I, and it was, quote-unquote, the war to end all wars. You have the, in-the-trench warfare, bloody, horrible, the use of mustard gas for the first time, or basically the first usage of biological warfare. Well, there was instances of biological warfare. I remember reading this anecdote about bodies contaminated with the bubonic plague placed on catapults and shot into the city. I guess that counts as germ warfare, biological warfare. But this is the first time that we see technology producing the biological warfare. Anyway, so the war to end all wars did not end all wars. And then we had World War II, which in many ways was far severe, much more severe than even World War I. After those wars occurred, the idea of man's intellect being his salvation, it was immediately given up on. I mean, you think about how educated countries like Japan and Germany were, and yet their slaughtering of people, and how, specifically Japanese soldiers treated the captives. I mean, it's horrible. So instead of a balanced view of, well, maybe we can't rely on human intellect to solve all of our problems, instead of just kind of balancing it out and saying, hey, we need to figure out, what the proper balance is, it went in the 100% opposite direction and said, intellect is horrible. Intellect resulted in these countries figuring out newer ways to kill each other. So let's go basically 100% in the opposite direction and let's just deny the usefulness of truth and knowledge and man's intellect altogether. That's basically what postmodernism is. It is the reaction to the failure of modernism. Now, it's our job as believers, as followers of Christ, that we always have a biblical view. And the biblical view concerning knowledge and intellect is pretty clear. I mean, Jesus, I mentioned last time, Jesus refers to himself as the incarnation of truth. He says that the greatest commandment is to love the Lord in part with all of your mind. But we need to properly balance that. If you have somebody who just worships God or loves God with his mind, that is not real love and that's not real worship. The same way as if you have someone who just loves God with his heart, that is not true spirituality. That's not true worship. We need to have a proper balance where we are equally loving God with our mind and loving God with our hearts and will as well. So I would say that modernism and postmodernism are equally errant views. They both make the opposite error, but they make it to a degree to where it's beyond, both of them transcend what humans should be focusing on or what humans should be focusing their efforts on. So anyways, let's get back to this list. And we don't have much to go over today. I just didn't want to do this all in one massive audio file. By the way, I want to do a shout out to my buddy Ross. He's one of the few people I know who diligently listens to my stuff. I'm not sure why, but he not only does that, but he does it while all the way over in Australia. So a shout out to you, buddy. I love you. I hope you're having fun playing Fallout and that you just keep being the man that God's called you to be. You continue to preach the gospel in Australia. I'm going to visit you sometime soon. We'll go around. We'll be preaching the gospel and defending the faith and gaming at the same time. So anyways, all right, let's get back to this list. We left off last time was we just went over the denial of the meta-narrative. Again, these are the tendencies or the views that we see in the Church of Oprah. Now, where we left off was we talked about the emphasis on feelings. Now, feelings are ultimately a moot point. They are moot because they don't get you anywhere. You cannot combat a feeling with another feeling. As I said last time, feelings are good, but only insofar as they push you to what you know to be good or true and beautiful. But you cannot trust your feelings to point you in the right direction. I mean, there's a lot of days where I don't feel like getting up out of bed. I'm like, man, I don't want to get up today. If I trusted that feeling, you know, I'd probably end up on like the Discovery Channel as one of those like bad guys that lays in bed all day. No, I don't think it would get that bad, but still, you know what I mean. Now, with the emphasis on feelings, there is a focus on honesty, integrity, love, and peace. Those things are all good things. You know, things like justice. You know, don't get me started. I don't want to go too much onto like social justice, or if you guys are familiar with the term SJW, social justice warrior. It's what a social justice warrior is basically somebody who acts as an advocate for a specific group of people. Social justice warriors, at least the way that we see them today, they are the prime examples of the Church of Oprah. They are the crusaders of this cause. To show you this degree, did you hear about what happened at Yale this last week. So what happened at Yale was there was an email that went around encouraging the faculty. I think it was originally started as the students, but encouraged the faculty to basically censor Halloween costumes. And one of the residents, or one of the resident directors, who's not just an RD, but actually affiliated with the school, does teaching and everything. There's a lot of schools where RDs don't do any teaching or anything, but this person does teaching and is in charge of the life on campus and stuff like that. And he responded and said, well, listen, if, you know, we're not going to go around and basically, you know, treat people like they're children and say, oh, you can't wear that or you can't wear this. If, you know, if you see something you don't like, you know, you don't have to look at it. And that was all he said, is basically, is like, if, you know, if you see something that offends you, just, you know, stay away from it. And this resulted in students protesting, wanting to kick the guy off campus, like saying that he is not creating an environment for a safe space. And even to his, and they were even protesting his wife, same thing, similar job, I believe, as him. And they, and these students wanted to get this person fired. And you could even go online and see there's the protest. There's this one student, and this just shows you how perverted and corrupted our culture has become. But you see this student, and she is yelling at this professor, at this man. And, you know, I should look up the quotation exactly. Maybe I'll mention it on the next audio, exactly what she says. In fact, I originally had it written down, but I had it on my other computer and I forgot to transfer it over. But it's very interesting. But she says, this is a school. Schools are not concerned with growing intellectually, but a school should be a safe place or a home for students. And she was dead, and she's like screaming this at a professor, and she's dead serious. This shows you how out of whack we are when it comes to what we consider to be politically correct and politically incorrect. Now, if you don't want to get offended, and if you want to have a safe place, I would say stay in your house. You know, when I first watched this, I thought about Bilbo Baggins. And, you know, in the Lord of the Rings movie, he's like, you know, it's a strange thing stepping out your front door. You never know, and that whole quotation, you know, you never know what's going to come about. But that's the whole idea of university, is you go to a place that isn't your home, that is a new area, that could be scary, and you're presented with new ideas. I mean, it should be socially acceptable for you to be offended constantly, well, in general, but at university, because you should be continually confronted with ideas that you've never heard before. That's the whole point of a liberal arts education, is to be confronted with ideas that you would never, or knowledge that you would never have if you stayed in your house. So the fact that this woman, or this young lady, thinks that university should be a safe place and not be a place of free exchange of ideas, I mean, that's absurd. If you want to have a safe place, don't leave your house. Because if you don't leave your house, you're probably going to be pretty safe. But if you want to learn things, and you want to be talking about cultural sensitivity or cultural awareness, I mean, where else would you go to be confronted with different cultures? That's part of the reason why I love traveling. That's what is I like to go and see these different cultures and see what people do with their free time. But it's scary. I mean, my first time I went to Europe, I mean, I don't remember how old I was, like 20 something. I was so scared. I remember the first night I cried all night long. I was like, what am I doing? I have no idea where I am. I'm in this hostel in the middle of London in the middle of winter, and I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing for the next few months. And it's scary. But if you want a safe place, if you want I hate that term now too. But if you want a safe place, don't leave your house and don't go to university. But kind of getting off track here. But yeah, the social justice warriors, perfect prime example of those who partake in the church of Oprah. Now, justice, honesty, integrity, love, peace, all those things that I mentioned earlier, those things cannot exist. First of all, they can't exist apart from God. And second of all, they can't exist apart from propositional truth. Now, even Friedrich Nietzsche, one of the world's most famous atheists, probably the most famous atheist of all time, you know, he argued that if God is dead, things like justice, meaning, all the stuff that the Church of Oprah like, he says, if God is dead, then those things are dead too. You cannot have meaning unless there is some transcendent God that can bestow that meaning. Or else, because then if there's no God, it just, we are these finite creatures that go about these short lives, and there's no ultimate meaning. So the only way you could even have this is if there existed a transcendent God. And then on top of that, you couldn't even know it or delineate it without propositional truth. But propositional truth is denied by this view. All right, so let's keep going. Emphasis on feelings was number five. Number six, we have an emphasis on stories. Now, if you're going to receive instruction, they would rather it be like, tell me a story and tell me the moral, so we know like the moral of the story. Now, there's nothing wrong with stories per se, but ultimately, again, it's contradictory. It's contradictory because in order for a story to have a moral of the story, then the only way that would make sense is one, if there existed a meta-narrative, and then also two, if there existed propositional truth, but they had already thrown those things out the window. Number seven, we also see there's a push for global unity. Now, at first, this doesn't seem like a bad thing. It's like, oh yeah, global unity, that's good. No. That's bad. Now, I'm not saying we want war, but there's a difference between global non-destruction and global unity. What they mean by global unity is a one-world government. A one-world government is a very, very bad thing. The fewer people that you have in charge of more people, the more destructive that government is. So for example, like Dr. Fernandez says, you know, the best possible government is a one world government that is sovereignly ruled by Jesus Christ. That's the best possible government. The worst possible government is a one world government sovereignly ruled by the Antichrist. So when you're going for global unity, you're taking power away from local governments, and you're giving that power to essentially a more a continually elite group of people. So the people in charge is smaller and smaller and smaller. Anytime that happens and that smaller and smaller group of people isn't moving towards Jesus Christ, the result of that will be horrendous. I mean, you think of like Chairman Mao, what did he kill, like 30 million people? You have one person with sole power that will always result in destruction. So global unity is another goal. Another thing we see with this view is sexual experimentation and sexual expression. Now this too is very dangerous. There is actually a number of studies that have been done to show the effect of specifically dopamine on the brain outside of a marriage. So when someone, when you engage in sexual activities, and this is not just between two people, but this is also the same problem you see with pornography, is if you have two, let's say we have two young adults and they engage in sexual relations, the there will be increased levels of dopamine that actually kind of result in a connection between those people. Now, that's good if those people are saying, hey, I want to love you and serve you and I want you to be my spouse for the rest of my life. If this was a one-night stand, or even if it was a three-month relationship, both of those scenarios are going to result in problems, because once that intimacy is gone, then the body responds by saying, hey, I really like that dopamine, and now I'm kind of depressed because I don't have it, so maybe you should go out and try and get me some more of that. And so what happens is your brain essentially becomes addicted and it becomes rewired to continually push for that addiction. I read this fascinating article, and this doctor actually said that he suggested that men, when they're having sex with their wives, to look their wives in the eyes, because it's it enhances their connection between the two of them, which is a good thing. However, when it's done outside of the bounds of marriage, it results in, like I said, very destructive mindset, very destructive thought patterns. Now, as the more one engages in these various sexual exploits, the more, in a sense, perverted or the more rewired his brain becomes. And then it starts saying, well, hey, I've been engaged, or this is more of like a overt thinking, but then you have people basically saying, hey, I've partook in this sexual exploit. It's not that bad. Why should I condemn somebody else's sexual exploit? Maybe even if it's not something that I'm into, but hey, more power to you. I mean, you even look at something like, I'm so glad I don't know her name. The Hannah Montana girl. What's Miley Cyrus. So, you know, you see her and, you know, she started off as this kid on this Disney TV show. And now she is, I mean, there's something like 20 different sexual orientations now that I read an article about it the other day, and I had not heard of like 18 of them. But you see her transform as she gets more and more involved in various sexual exploits, the more as it results in her changing even her preferences. And so now I think she recognizes herself as like a pansexual or something like that. I don't know. So whatever the case is, the more involved you are in sexual exploits outside of marriage, the more perverted your sense of sexual acceptability becomes, and the more what you consider acceptable comes to light. It's really interesting. I think it was Dr. Fernandez was telling me about, I forget who it was. He was an apologist guy, and he was talking about how, he says, so many Americans don't highly disagree with God's destruction of the Canaanites in the Old Testament. And this apologist was saying, it was like, yeah, it's because if you look at the Canaanite culture and what they were involved in, it's very similar to a lot of what the United States is being involved with now. I'll tell you, homosexuality is a unique sin in that it's the only one I know of, whereas God judged the pagan nations for being involved with that sin. Leviticus 18 talks about, Leviticus is God's standards of righteousness for Israel during a specific time. And even during that time where God was putting on these standards for Israel, it mentions in chapter 18 that says, but this sin is so detrimental and it changes the mindset of a nation to the degree that God says, I even judged the pagan nations and held them to the standard, even though I didn't explicitly tell them that this was my standard. So sexual experimentation, sexual expression is huge. And this is also goes back to the occult. You'll see many different cults, and the occult will always be very liberal with their use of and the exploitation of sex because of that rewiring factor. The more involved you get with various sexual exploits and the more personally involved you are, the more your brain is rewired and the more you accept that perversion. It's interesting because it shows you this, just if you want to know the perfect example of how this manifests itself in the culture today, is look at what our culture tells us about sex. Number one, it says have lots of sex, and then number two, it says don't have babies. Because think about it. I mean, you go and you look at MTV and their commercials, the stuff they say. They're, I've never seen a single MTV commercial or any commercial that's like that is saying, yes, we need to be good fathers, be good mothers. Let's raise these children right. It's always about, they'll show these shows with people being involved in sexual immorality. And then they'll do a commercial for, hey, make sure you use safe sex. Make sure that you're always protected. And if you're not, go and get an abortion. Well, the reason why they want lots of sex but no kids is the sex part reprograms the mind and gets people accepted to various perversions, but at the same time, these people want a small population because a small population is easier to control. We talked about Ted Turner last time, and he basically says, you know, if you do not think you're God, you are holding back man's progression to the next level. And this actually goes up perfectly to my next point, is what's called evolutionary godhood. And what evolutionary godhood is kind of, in many ways, is the defining factor of the Church of Oprah. It's two primary premises. Number one, man is ultimately good. And then number two, man is God. You know, Ted Turner had said, you know, it might not say so on your driver's license, but you are actually a God. You are God. And I've even been told that before. But I remember this one time I was talking to this lady and she's like, well, we all are God. And I'm like, what? How are we all God? And she says, well, because we are made of the potter's hands. And I was like, okay, but does being made by the potter's hands entail that we are of the same substance as the potter? And she was like, what? She didn't quite understand what I was getting at. You know, it's like, if I'm God, do I really need somebody to tell me? I mean, if I'm God, wouldn't that be pretty evident? I mean, if you have to, I mean, that'd be like telling somebody, you know, you see those videos on YouTube or whatever, and somebody is blowing out their birthday cake and something catches on fire. At first, they don't know it, and they have to say, oh my gosh, you're on fire. But if you were God, that would be like you being on fire and you not realizing it for half of your life. It's like, well, no, I think if you catch on fire, you're going to notice it pretty quickly. Same thing. As soon as you're conscious, you think you'd be able to figure out that you're God. And so the evolutionary Godhead is basically that man is good and that man is divine. And anybody who doesn't think that man is divine is slowing the process of humanity going to the next level. So those are basically the primary aspects of the Church of Oprah. I'll go over them just real quick. Is we have the new tolerance. That all lifestyles are equally good and wholesome. We have the no absolute truths, no absolute morality, the denial of the meta-narrative, emphasis on feelings, including justice is where we get our social justice warriors. Now, that's another thing, too, is we're starting to focus on certain groups that, well, you know, I'll stick with that when I go through some of these correlations. Global unity, pushing towards a one world government, sexual experimentation, sexual exploitation. And that man is basically the center of all things, that man is good, and that man is God. Now, their view of God is, it's like that of Star Wars. It's ultimately an impersonal force. They like force because force is obscure, and forces can't really grant you revelation. Forces can't grant revelation because forces are just, you know, they're forces. You know, it's no different than electricity. Gravity. Yeah, or gravity or something like that. But at the same time, they do say that you can obtain that godhood status. Now, I don't really like the idea of obtaining a status of electricity. Like, I like being a person, but I don't see the appeal of attaining that level of, I don't even know. I don't think that's really an evolution. It seems like a de-evolution to me. So a few more things I want to explain is the basic premises of this view is that all human ills and problems, they stem from man's inability to perceive himself as God. So everything that's going on in the world today, all these problems come about because man refuses to worship himself. And this is basically also results in panentheism, which is the belief that everything in the universe is identical. Everything in the universe is God. Real quick, I'm just going to go through a couple of things. Just these final notes, just for you to be aware of. Often in these circles, teachers, they're referred to as like gurus, shamans, ascended masters. That's another thing. Political tendencies. Those who are a part of the Church of Oprah have specific types of political tendencies. These include things like feminism, globalism. We talked about last time eugenics or transhumanism. Now, I know those things aren't identical, but they're very similar. Now, feminism, before I studied third wave feminism, like even when I was in university, I was like, I referred to myself as a feminist because I was like, I thought feminism meant equal rights. And that's originally what it started out as. But as I've studied it and continue to study it, it has nothing to do with equal rights now. It's horrible. I mean, it's just, especially the third wave feminism, it's just talking about, you know, going into universities. There was this, I forget what university it was at. It was at one of the major big universities, and there was a conference about men's rights issues. And because men are, you know, 95% of suicides are men, 98% of workplace deaths are of men. Men get custody of their children just a fraction of percentage of the time. For sexually based crimes, or even any crimes in general, I mean, the sentencing of a man for the same crime as a woman is, I mean, the woman does like a tenth of the amount of jail time as a man would do for the same crime. But at this one university, they were doing this, and these social justice warriors, these feminists, freaked out. And so they said, we're going to create a safe space. And so what the safe space was, it was this room where women could go so they didn't have to be confronted with these misogynistic notions of, you know, a guy not wanting to be on a sex offender list because he, you know, went to the bathroom at a playground at 2 a.m. or something like that. They're like, no, we need a safe space away from that because these issues aren't real. And so they created the safe place, and it was comprised of, you go in there and they had like coloring books and a place to listen to music and a place to blow bubbles. And I was like, oh my gosh, they're basically saying that women are children that need to be protected and coddled, and they can't handle these ideas. I'm like, that seems to me like the most anti-feministic notion there is. So whatever the case is, feminism is one of those things that until you study it, you realize that it's not a good thing. I mean, it's a bad thing that they're not concerned about equal rights. They're concerned with women's superiority. So once I realized that, I was kind of like really ashamed. I was like referring to myself as a feminist, but it was mostly the way I took it as is like, yeah, I'm for equal rights. Let's focus on that. But then when you look at it, it has nothing to do with it. So, teachers are gurus, shamans, ascended masters, political tendencies, feminist, globalism, eugenics, transhumanism, religious relatives. Religious relatives would be stuff like the Unity Churches of Christianity, Christian Science, the faith movement we see in some Pentecostal circles. Two more things I want to talk about is just basically the views that are most blatantly unbiblical views. And then finally, I want to give you a series of buzzwords that when you hear these things, you know, okay, probably need to be careful of this because it's pushing towards the Church of Oprah. So the unbiblical views are that God and man are essentially the same. I mean, when I talk to, you know, Mormon missionaries, when they show up at my house and I talk to them about the doctrine of eternal progression, where they think that Mormon males can become gods, I say to them, how can you read the Old Testament and think there is any other conclusion other than God saying, I'm God and you're not. I'm God and you will never be God. And I ask them, how can you read the Old Testament and not reach that conclusion? That is the sole thesis of the Old Testament, is God saying, I'm the God who sits enthroned and am worthy of worship and nothing else is. What'd you say?
They're like, that's a mistranslation.
Yeah, a mistranslation. another unbiblical view is, I didn't even talk about this one, but unlimited potential. Basically, the idea that, well, I guess I did talk about it in the evolutionary godhood, is that with potential, as long as we keep meeting that potential, eventually we become God. Usually this view will hold to a type of reincarnation. It's, again, another blatantly unbiblical view. For it's appointed unto man to die once. Very clear. Number four, moral unaccountability. They say, like, yeah, you know, you are your own sheriff. See, I don't understand how this view could hold to moral unaccountability and then yet have social justice warriors at the same time. That makes no sense. Number five, self-focus or man-focus. Man is the measure of all things. Again, anytime man is the focus, destruction is usually the result. I mean, modernism. Let's solve all of humanity's problems through unaided human reason. Cool. Two huge destructive world wars was the result. And then finally, truth is not important. Truth is very important in the biblical sense. I mean, again, it is part of the greatest commandment. So a few of these buzzwords, and then we'll close it up here. So if you hear now again, just because someone says these things, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're Oprahite, but these are some of the buzzwords and phraseologies. So people say, you know, open to new levels of experience, exploring and transcending your belief system, creating your own reality. Now, creating your own reality, that one should be true. If somebody talks about creating your own reality, you need to run. Because that's never a good thing. Visualization, enhancement, spiritual awakening, self-esteem, synergy, nirvana, higher self, spirituality without moralizing. Or those people say, I'm spiritual but not religious. That's another one. consciousness revolution, cosmic consciousness, harmonic convergence. I've heard that one a couple times. Human potential, guided imagery, channeling, one world auras, overstatement and emphasis on right or left brain. Now, I don't necessarily have a problem with right or left brain. Is what they're saying is when they do this, they're trying to diminish one for the sake of the other. So if you're thinking too much, they'll be like, stop, that's too much thought. You need to go to the analytic side. You need to let go of that. Again, if anyone, any religious leader tells you to stop thinking, the majority of time that is very bad. So in this sense, if they're trying to distinguish and diminish one over the other, that's bad. Yoga. Now, again, I have Christian friends who do yoga and they're fine with it. I really don't want to be involved with it. If you look at the background of yoga, it has a very strong occultic past. But I'm not dogmatic on it. Like, I've done yoga before. I just found it boring. But hey, there's some people that like it and they'll do it. I'm like, sure, that's fine. Just, you know, just be careful. Astral body, clairvoyance, karma. Oh my gosh. When Christians use the word karma, I want to slap them in the face. Karma is not a Christian notion. So there's a few of the buzzwords. So bottom line is the Church of Oprah is just blatantly anti-biblical. As soon as you hear these people start talking about this stuff, that should be your first clue that this does not correspond with the Bible. And a lot of times, if anybody has to even tell you that what they're teaching essentially corresponds with the Bible, that should be your first hint that it doesn't. Because the Bible in itself presents a worldview. It presents the Christian worldview. Why would we need a supplemental worldview that corresponds with it? We don't. We have the biblical worldview, and that is our model. But when we start going off on these tangents, talking about karma and trying to encourage people in sexual experimentation and exploitation and focus on man, I mean, all these things, the end result of them is destruction. So again, be on guard, be aware of these things, and we will continue to equip the Christians, equip believers to do the work of the ministry. So God bless you guys. Keep fighting the good fight. Keep preaching the gospel. And any questions, issues, comments, feel free to send me an email, matt@mjcoombe.com, mjcoombe.com. All right. God bless you guys. Take care.